Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. We're back with our second listener submitted movie for listener submitted month, and this one comes from our friend Tom. Shocking Dark, a movie that I think he's written to us every year to watch, and this is finally the year we did it.
He's written to us. He's also messaged me
directly. Oh, he's messaged me too.
He's really been campaigning for this one for a long time, and I hope that he is happy that he has finally subjected us to this.
How many years have you all been doing Listener Submitted?
Well, since for years. Year? No, well, you have to remember in the beginning. So the year we were still Reddit Horror Club. So there was all the Reddit Horror Club people were still picking movies. And we were like, well, that doesn't work. But then it was like, it would be like me pick, Scott pick, Adam pick, and then a listener pick to end each month.
That's right.
And then we were like,
a long time ago.
And that's when we were like, all right, let's consolidate this shit. Then we were doing it 3 months out of the year. Then it turned into 2 months out of the year. And then I was like, you motherfuckers get 1 month.
It's, at some point, listeners, you aren't going to be a part of this.
Well, oh, Scott has threatened a couple times.
3 years ago, it was so bad that I was like, we're never doing Listener Submitted month again. And then last year, everybody redeemed themselves with a really great month. And this year, everybody's just doing fine. So, as long as they don't feed us bullshit, I will not have a problem.
Listeners. It's a real D's get degrees type situation here. But, all right. So, here's the email Tom sent us. He said, look, I've been trying to get you guys to cover Shocking Dark for years now. At this point, I don't care. I tried to give you guys the scoop on it, but it's been on several other shows at this point. Hell, I personally covered it for Greatest Movie Ever podcast with Paul Chapman. What more do you want? It's an Italian ripoff with a bananas plot and terrible effects. But sure, ignore it for another year. I don't care. Just know that it's twice the film that Last Shark is, Matt. It's synthesizer soundtrack bops harder than any console crash that Scott could create. And I can't watch this film sober, Kyle. Tom. So, real aggressive email from Tom.
And you know, you got his attention. You know how much I love aggressive men telling me what to watch. So,
yeah, that's kind of Kyle's kink.
Hey,
so
can I make my first joke though?
Go for it.
It's not going to go uphill from here. This is it. Schlocking Dark.
No,
mute your microphone now.
Listen,
Scott.
Listen.
Thanks for listening to our movie night.
I loved it.
Shocking Dark is the movie that answers the question, which one of the James Cameron movies was Terminator when we decided to make the sequel? Because I don't remember. So this film was released in Italy under the name Terminator 2, which
certainly was.
Imagining
incredible.
imagining how disappointed you were watching a movie called Shocking Dark and it being like this. Just imagine if you thought it was the sequel to Terminator when you started watching it.
And the thing is this, that it's like two movies. It's like
it is
the first scene and the first half of the first act and the entire third act are shitty Terminator ripoff. The entire middle is Aliens.
1,000%. Every character is it. Like, it is, like, absurd how much it is ripping off Aliens.
There's a part where
moment.
One of the people goes, kill me. I mean, come on.
It's right there.
Well, so here's the thing. Kyle, you're going to pronounce this name better than I am. Who's the writer of this movie?
Claudio Fragasso.
Does that name sound familiar to you, Scott?
No.
Should I say it not like that? Do you want me to say it like a normal person? Claudio Fragasso.
So Claudio Fragasso, you might remember from him appearing in a documentary that we love called Best Worst Movie about a film that he wrote and directed called Troll 2.
No!
This was
so
the film he wrote right before Troll 2 was this.
That explains
a
thousand
and one things.
I would have loved to have known that this morning before watching this film.
This is a morning movie for you? I'm so sorry.
This was a whole day movie for me.
It was 20-minute
increments throughout the day.
I needed breaks because I actually have a note. Let me phonetically pronounce how one of these actors, who I don't think any of these people have ever seen a script before.
Nope.
They definitely did not do high school acting because they're worse than high schoolers. Well, you've got 15 minutes to get ready to commence operation of Delta Venice. I believe that is what I wrote down.
No, but here's the thing. You have such a wide gamut of performances in this, right? Because you've got the American actors who are probably reading a script that was translated directly from Italian into English. But the other side is then you have some of the Italian actors who were practically like speaking like Super Mario with how over the top the like Italian stereotype is. And the one line
15
that
yards.
No, the
10
line,
yards.
The line that I wrote down, and I might be exaggerating slightly, but I'm not exaggerating that much, is there's a scene where there's a firefight and he goes, "Sir, we have a no cover over here." it is insane.
Well, you're forgetting the one variable here between the actors that you
the little
the two
girl
types of actors. No, yeah, you're forgetting that Bruno Mattei does not direct anybody.
No,
he's just it's one takes of everything. So it's the writing being translated probably directly, and then Bruno Mattei just being like, "Cut." Next to the action, cut. Have you ever seen that meme of, I believe it's in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, where it's Richard Iowati's character just picking up the phone going, "Hello, boy," and hanging up? That's what I imagine. Action, cut of Bruno Mattei happening.
The only piece of trivia that I found about this movie on IMDb just mentioned that in an early scene in the movie, like in the first like 2 minutes of the movie, a character's on the phone receiving information and just nodding their head as if that is the response that the person on the other phone is waiting for on if they understood the information.
It's a camera phone, dude. Yeah. This is a sci-fi movie.
It's the future.
No.
Can't you tell by the low-budget control center, which is truly my favorite set piece of any of these types of movies, it's just flashing, just beep-bop-booping lights
gotten,
all over the fucking
man,
place.
When Brian did Planet of the Vampires, I feel like Kyle would have been in heaven because that control center was the most bullshit thing I've ever seen for this show.
Well,
I love
also
that shit.
This is like one of those movies where it's like, we're going to jump into the future, but we're only going to jump about 20 years into the future for the sake of the movie.
The year 2000.
The year 2000.
It was the year 2000.
Dude,
oh, yeah, so they jumped 10, 11 years into
or
the future. 89.
This, 89.
They jumped 11 years into the future.
But the year 2000 sounds really futuristic. I mean, it's 2022, and it still sounds futuristic to say the year 2000.
Right. In the year 2000.
We
lived it, and it still seems far off.
Yeah.
I just like whenever you do these movies where it's like, all right, it's the future, but it's only like 10 years into the future. So the only thing that they can come up with is like, fashion is crazy now.
Yeah.
Like,
and their
fashion
police
is new
team
wave.
Is called.
It's all this movie is.
fashion's nuts, and their futuristic team is just called Megaforce. Like, there's real...
If we're going to talk about anything that's involved with naming, we got to talk about the fact that they are all part of the Tubular Division, which I believe...
the Tubular Corporation.
I believe the only way that you can become part of the Tubular Corporation is that you have to either know how to do machines, you're cool but rude, or a party dude. Those are the ways to get into the Tubular Corporation, as far as I understand.
That joke has legs, all right?
I love it. I love it. You just have to get I'd imagine you just have to get pitted so pitted. And then, but Venice is full of water. It's fine.
Yeah, well, how much is it of it is polluted, though?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh
my this God. Now, this movie starts off, and I thought I was watching a trailer for a second because it's like 1.1 second in voiceover. It's like Venice is destroyed by 2020.
You're
like,
you try to go back to the Tubi list and you play movie. You just perpetually
this
for 5 minutes.
This is why
it
took them all day.
You fall down the whole shutter hole that you had the last time you tried to watch Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker.
Thankfully, this shit was on YouTube with zero commercials, which was
how
it needed to be watched. but you know what? I'm going to push back on Tom with one thing. I'm not going to say that it has good special effects, but I was expecting the monster to look a lot shittier than it actually looked when it first started showing up on
screen. And
there
are like 5 of them that show up multiple times. Now, there are, let's say 5 monsters, but 2 designs, which I find impressive because the first design looks exactly like the Man-Thing, which Man-Thing, for the uninitiated out there, probably people that are way younger than me, Man-Thing was Marvel's answer to the Swamp Thing. Much less interesting character, but as a Swamp Thing fanatic, I love Man-Thing just because I can't get enough Swamp Thing. But he looks exactly like that. And then the other ones look like Harlequin Ichthyosis, Better Ray Bill, if we're going with Marvel characters. Yep. So a horse alien that has no skin.
I registered, and this is a little bit of a deep cut, but I registered one of those designs looking like Vader's New Japan helmet, which if there's any wrestling fans, there was this big wrestler Vader when he went to New Japan Pro Wrestling, he wore this big H.R. Giger looking fucking like to his shoulders.
I don't even
mask.
Like wrestling, and I know that mask. That's
how impressive it was. I tried to look it up because I like didn't know enough of the history of it, and I was like, apparently he just wore it then, maybe once. Like all the screen grabs I can find are of the same match. But it's a beautiful mask, and when I saw
Geiger was like cease and desist, please.
Immediately. Good thing it was in Japan, I guess. The beautiful thing is that there is 5 monsters. But there's also only 5 shots of the 5 monsters being destroyed. Maybe 10. Maybe there's 10 shots of them being destroyed. But
I think they spent a good 3 hours with those monsters, all right? Like 3 whole hours, guys. Bruno Matai was like, we need as much as we can to use throughout the movie.
There was so much smoke. I can't imagine they lasted very long.
A lot of Doritos on set.
Oh yes. I didn't last very long with all the smoke from the Doritos. But those monsters, when they get shot, you know, you expect like maybe like a gas valve like amount of smoke, you know, like a pss. This blooms like fucking immense amount of smoke.
I
want to
know what factory were they in that they shot 90% of this? Because, and I'm not saying that we have the answer. This is one of those things that I'm always going to wonder, because there are these big vats, and the set pieces aren't bad, but I know they spent $15 on a day on renting that place out. So I don't know what in Italy there was. Was it an olive oil factory?
Yeah, what the fuck was it? There were big vats and valves, and they certainly used. I remember I noticed that they used the same hallway about 3 times with different lighting setups. There was the red light hallway, the regular hallway, the blue light hallway, all of which were the same hallway.
So according to IMDb, whole movie single set. I know it's
color
shocking.
Me shocked.
Yeah, I know that's
dark,
really
shocking, dark.
The other thing I need to talk about, we were talking about the different accents, be it the English person that's reading phonetically the Google Translate version of a script or the Italian people who can't cover up their accent. But no one struggled more with not sounding like an Italian than the little girl that's basically Newt. Like, just like
I knew that
time...
she was a little girl because she was wearing ribbons in her hair. I mean, that was a super important plot piece.
I could not, like, it was one of those movies where every couple minutes a new scene comes up. And you know how, like, Brian, when we did the last shark episode, Brian was like, the best part about this is, like, everyone says that they've made a Jaws ripoff, but, like, what they just mean is that they've made a movie that has a shark in it. Like, but Last Shark was, like, so blatant in hitting every single plot beat of Jaws throughout the entire run. That was me watching this, where I'm like, this is insane that this is basically beat by beat, character by character, like, every one of the Space Marines from Aliens.
Yeah.
Like, the whole way.
But they did not have a cool name.
No, they were the Mega Force. That's the coolest
That's
name. It combines,
like,
the words Mega and Force.
And Force.
Use your brain, Scott. Shit. I love that, like, it is a beat-for-beat ripoff of those things with zero urgency.
Yeah.
Nobody has a fucking lick of urgency. Even when, like, not even the countdown timer that's going to tell them that this whole place is going to blow up is like, yeah, maybe 5 minutes. I don't know. four more. Like, it's
Did you catch the line that the Great Value Terminator says to the main lady? He goes, in 10 minutes, this place is going to blow, but in 10 seconds, you're going to be dead. Ah!
And you know what? Neither happened. No sense of time in this fucking basement.
You know what? I will say this much, though. If I'm going to give a compliment to this movie.
Why?
It's this. The fact that this movie advertises itself to be Terminator 2, they rip off Alien. And Aliens. They're ripping both of them off.
Both, yeah.
But they managed to take the reveal that the one person in the team was a robot in Alien as a way to seamlessly bleed into their Terminator ripoff.
Don't give them that much credit, actually, dude. They forgot what movie they were ripping off.
Listen.
Come on.
Turns Matt around. You know, this is pretty fucking good.
This movie's pretty tight. No, I mean, I know that there are people who are going to be all about this movie. Tom, clearly, being one of them. This was a fun experience, but short of me having like 10, 15 people over my house to watch a movie, there is zero chance I'm ever revisiting Shocking Dark.
No, this was, like, this was painful.
Yeah. It,
alone.
It,
I might. Now, this is definitely a don't watch alone movie because...
No.
I was so alone in the stupidity.
Yeah, like, I feel like if you find out that, like, a local theater is doing a midnight screening of Shocking Dark, like, fucking go. I'm sure that this with, like, a theater of people just hooting and hollering and making fun of it is, like, a good time. But, yeah, at 11 in the morning, sitting in my recliner in my living room watching it on my laptop was not exactly changing my life by any stretch of the imagination. And... you know, I'm one of those people that does not like watching things on a laptop. I would prefer to have it on a TV any given chance. But I watched Tammy and the T-Rex, the gory cut, on my laptop, and I had a fucking blast with it. So I don't want anyone telling me that I didn't appreciate this movie because I watched it on a laptop.
Could you imagine if that was, they were like, oh, this is the way. This is the way in. He definitely watched it on a laptop. It's his fault. It's his fault.
He would have, if you would have watched it on the big screen... you would have understood the subtle brilliance. Yeah.
If you would have picked up the Severin Blu-ray, then you would... Actually, I guess I should see if that DVD sale is still going on, because if it's happening...
I just got an email that said that Vinegar is doing... they're dropping one in a couple in a week.
They're doing a big sale.
For my own sake, I've been deleting those emails before I could open them up.
Yeah, because you're sick of ketchup sandwiches. Did I say on the podcast where I got that reference?
What, the ketchup sandwiches? It's from real life. I ate ketchup sandwiches when I was poor.
No. When I was in junior high, I went to an antique store and found, like, the first 20 issues of the Dazzler comic book. And in the first issue of Dazzler, she is so poor because she's a starving artist trying to become a singer that she is eating ketchup sandwiches, and it always stuck with me. So I made that joke of my own volition, not knowing that Matt has literally eaten ketchup sandwiches because he was so poor.
Yeah, the year
it's because he has so many DVDs.
Right. No, no, no. It wasn't just that. It was that I got laid off. I got laid off from my job immediately after I finished college. So I like started with a giant deficit. So yeah. I was like, all right, surviving on what we got. I can buy a bottle of ketchup for $3 and a loaf of bread. And that's 5-6 days worth of lunches. Let's do this.
America.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
Hi, friends. The world got you down? Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
All right, so what are we thinking double feature-wise on this bad boy?
Kyle, you get to go first this time, buddy.
So I am going to pick... So this movie was written by... Shocking Dark was written by Claudio Fragasso, who also wrote A Zombie 3. However, I'm not going to pick his Zombie 3, which is Fulci's Zombie 3. I'm going to pick another Zombie 3 that is better known as Burial Ground.
Oh, I've never seen it. Is it good? It's on my to-do list.
It's amazing.
Is it Kyle amazing or is it Scott amazing?
Kyle amazing, for sure.
I'll still fucking watch it. I was
hoping
to know what
you
was
wouldn't
into.
Clarify. No, Burial Ground. So in the same way that this film has these creatures that are, again, nobody has any urgency. Burial Ground has zombies with zero urgency. However, Burial Ground does have the single greatest child character in all of Italian cinema, in my humble opinion. And we know how Italian kids are. I mean, Bob is the worst. This little girl, this 30-year-old little girl was really bad in Shocking Dark. Was it the kids in Red Queen? No. There was another kid.
Kids in Red Queen that actually quite fun.
Yes. Yeah. So this kid is older than the Shocking Dark girl and plays maybe a younger child. And it's zombies. And it's Italian zombies. It's beautiful. It's chef's kiss, Italian stereotype, beautiful. That is my double feature. And it's on my list for the show. So we will get to it eventually.
Okay, right. Then I won't watch it myself.
No. You hold your beautiful little horses there.
All right. Well, I'm going to double feature this with a Rutger Hauer vehicle called Split Second. Have you guys ever heard of Split Second from 91,
no.
I want to say?
No.
Now, it's been on my long, long list for horror movie night, so I won't really get into it, but this is my thought process. So I was watching this piece of shit, Shocking Dark, and I was thinking about other movies that it kind of gave me feelings for, and I was thinking, I was like, Blade Runner, because I don't know. And then I was like, this movie and Blade Runner, you could never double feature them together because Blade Runner is a fucking legit masterpiece. And I was like, what about Blade Runner 2049 or whatever the one is with Ryan Gosling? I was like, I fell asleep watching it. I don't even think it's worth trying again. So I'm like, Rutger Hauer Pictures. And I'm like, oh, Split Second, the one with the fucking alien monster. It's perfect because Rutger Hauer was in Blade Runner. It's got an alien monster. It's not great, But I would definitely finish my night with that because I think that it is a higher point than Shocking Dark.
Okay.
Beautiful. Poster's great.
I watched this movie. It was a really shitty Aliens ripoff. So I'm going to watch a slightly less shitty Aliens ripoff known as Carnosaur 2.
Oh, so good.
That's going to be my double feature for the night.
Have fun, Matt. You son of a bitch. I love it.
All right, so what we've watched, read, listened to, whatever.
I watched Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Dream Master, for the first time.
First time. Ooh, you lucky
You wouldn't
boy.
Happen to be getting prepped for anything else, but...
No. So I thought that I'd seen this, and I realized that I confused 3 for 4, not just because of the inherent connection of characters, but, right? There's...
Well, and also, so this is where up until the last word, they are the same title.
Right, like, right, right.
I get them confused.
That's
all the
probably,
time.
Honestly, that's probably fucking part of it. Like, but last week I watched Resurrection. Both were with my friend Jeanette, who is a big fan of the show, and she's looking at starting her own horror podcast of looking at horror movies through the eyes of love and gender and sexuality. She's very excited to get going on that, and it'll be a good time for her. But when we get together, we just watch anything and everything that feels right, and for some reason 4 felt right. It's fun. Like, I guess when I, if I were to like sort of like boil down what I imagine a Nightmare on Elm Street movie to be for like the uninitiated or like people who know Freddy Krueger as popular culture, that's probably the one that I would be like, oh yeah, that's the pacing of it is null. It's just like kills and characters and Freddy's one-liners and great effects. It's like the perfect, it feels like 3 and 4 are the perfect bridge to either end of the spectrum, you know?
Well, I think in the episode that we did on part 4, I even said like, this is, to me, that is the movie where Freddy became like an MTV character. Like, he's like throwing on the Ray-Bans at the beach, and like, it is just, it is the, to me, that is when Freddy truly became part of the 80s lexicon, right, in a way that really was not seen by any other horror franchise character in that way before, or even really after, for years. Like, even like, even at its peak, I don't think like Ghostface or Jigsaw has even come close to the pop culture relevance of Freddy Krueger in 1989.
I feel Chucky was the only one who came close, and it seemed like an alternate route. You know what I mean? Like, it seemed like a parallel road, but not quite the same like highway that Freddy was on. Like, it didn't bother me that was like, I was like, oh, finally, like, I see what that is, that connective tissue that I just never actually got to sit down and watch. Like, I watched Never Sleep Again, and I got all like the behind the scenes stuff and the effects stuff and like a little bit of the culture of it, but just sitting and like accepting the movie for like what it was and what it is, it was fun. It was a fun watch.
Yeah, no, I enjoy that one. It also, as we all know, it has the best kill in Freddy history with that cockroach kill, man. That thing is a sight to be seen. All right, Scott, how about you? What did you watch this week?
I watched something very new. I watched The Princess on Hulu. I really liked it. It is a very simple premise. It's this princess is locked in a tower. It's obviously a medieval fantasy action fantasy kind of movie, and she's trying to get down the tower fighting different people to save her family from this evil prince. And dude, it's so dumb. Like, the premise is so simple. It kind of is like a video game but a live action movie. I really enjoyed it, and now I won't watch it again because I'm not much of an action movie guy. I was a little tired of all the action scenes, but the fight photography was so good. Every action scene was, it felt like you were playing a boss in a video game, which I really liked. And the female lead was phenomenal. There are a lot of just great actors in it. And it has a fun little MCU connection, two of them actually, because Dominic Cooper plays the evil prince. He was Howard Stark, young Howard Stark in Agent Carter and Avengers Endgame. And then the Olga something or other who played Taskmaster in Black Widow is his consort. So real fun, very turn your brain off and just have a good time kind of movie. Highly recommend it. If you have Hulu, it's an hour. It's literally 90 minutes. I don't think it goes more than 91 minutes, including the couple, like the 30 or 40 seconds over the 90 minute mark. It's a very quick watch.
All right. And I've got one that dropped on Netflix recently. It is a 3-part documentary series because your homeboy just loves watching documentaries about what happened at Woodstock 99. So I watched Trainwreck Woodstock 1999.
Oh, no.
Which is a little bit, it hits a lot of the same notes as the HBO Max documentary that came out last year. Mm-hmm. It does a little bit better of a job at depicting why people stayed. You know what I mean? Like, because I think in the first one you're watching, you're like, why the fuck did anybody stay at this thing? And like, they really do capture where, like, you know, they pull like old interview footage where they're like, why are you here? And it's like, I paid $155 to be here. Like, I came here to see like whatever band and I'm staying until that band plays. So it really does capture a lot of that. And it's just one of the big things that I walked away from with it is that I wish I could have seen Bush's performance at Woodstock 99 live, because it is a great set list. It's like I looked it up on Setlist FM afterwards. Like, Gavin Rossdale is interviewed in the first episode, because they literally, it's three parts, and it's like part one is day one, part two is day two of the show, and part three is night three.
Oh, that's a fucking brilliant way to do it. Yeah, and that's I mean, that's so obvious, but it's also, it didn't have to be that.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
And it's jumps. That's tension building in its own fucking
It's tension
life.
Building, and they keep bouncing back and forth. So they'll get to day two and like what the lineup is, and then it'll jump to like the people who organize it, like the kids who were helping out that were like, we told them you really shouldn't put like Limp Bizkit right after Rage Against the Machine, right after this band, like it's going to be too much escalation, they wouldn't listen to us. And then you like go into like what happened in the moment or whatever. Gavin Rossdale, Bush closed out night one after Korn, and he's like,
in 99,
and he's like, I'm standing backstage watching the show on the monitors and seeing this ocean of people that are all moving as one in a mosh pit, and thinking, I've got to go out there and play Glycerine soon. Like, but they actually give him a lot of credit. And a lot of people said, like, what could have been a very quick, like, off-on switch from going from, like, the high anxiety of Korn into, like, more of the mellow alternative rock sound of Bush. Like, they're like, Gavin Rossdale, like, came out there as a guy who, like, really loves what Woodstock is supposed to be. So, like, you know, he did the high energy stuff. He starts with Machine Head. Like, he plays like those like kind of high octane Bush songs. But like throughout, he's like, I hope everyone's doing out there, doing right, all right out there. I hope you're at peace. I hope that you're like full of, like, he just kept talking about like peace and love and like unity, and like tried to like bring things back down. And they're like, you know, things could have popped off on Friday night, but they didn't. Like, and that's because Gavin Rossdale was like so masterful at like bringing the mood to like a nice, satisfying closing tonight. And then it's like you jump to the next night and it's like, all right, we're going. Like, now it's just like escalation in like the sounds that you're hearing tonight. And it's just like, oh, okay.
Do you think it's repetitive to watch both? I never watched the HBO one and I was really excited to, and
I think you get good different sides of the story. This one, they interview the biggest fucking hick I've ever seen in my entire life who attended the show, and he's just like, yo man, I was so excited to see Kid Rock.
Amazing.
But here's the question that I have, and we said this actually on One Hit Thunder as well, but like, where's the fucking Woodstock 94 documentary? Because like, that is uncomparably the best Woodstock. Like, you look at the lineup for Woodstock 69, it is an embarrassing list of who is that, followed by like three or four bands that you know. Like it's like a lot of
Matt,
like,
you're
nobody.
Also in your 30s, come
no,
on man.
Listen, I appreciate 60s music just as much as the next one, but do you know who headlined the first night was Ravi Shankar? Like, that's like what closed out the Friday of Woodstock.
Here's the thing. I've heard that name before.
Yeah, he's the sitar player for the Beatles. That's thing. Like it's not like it's like everyone
Wait,
acts
Woodstock
like
it was unprecedented, yeah, though.
It's
it unprecedented.
Is. But I think like you look at the lineup of 94 and you're just like, this is literally...
Who headlined
the
first night of 94, Matt? Matt,
what did you say?
Come on. Who headlined 94 first night?
Well, Red Hot Chili Peppers headlined both 94 and 99, which is crazy. But it's like, that's the show where you're getting Nine Inch Nails closing out one night. You're getting, I think Nine Inch Nails closed out Friday. But like, 94, just you look at that lineup, it's like, this is literally the embodiment of everything that was happening in music in 1994. Because you've got like... Blind Melon, The Cranberries, Green Day, like,
oh yeah, Cypress Hill's
Cypress
on there.
Hill,
Melissa what? Etheridge.
Yeah, the lineup okay. is insane for 94. But I think nothing really bad happened except for the Mud People, which wasn't bad. It was just like a bunch of stoners that, because it was raining and muddy, they just covered themselves in mud and claimed to be the Mud People all weekend. And that's like when they threw mud at Primus when they started playing My Name Is Mud.
Yeah, I mean, Wikipedia has two bullets for notable events day one, four for two, and three for three, which is just Peter Gabriel headlined. So that's not even a notable event. I can see that. I can see that in the paragraph before.
But I'm sure if you go to the notable events for Woodstock 99, it's
oh,
like,
no, that's a whole separate page.
It's a fucking train wreck. So I think it's just like no one wants a documentary about a festival that was successful
that was
and
fine.
Nothing bad.
It was great. Yeah.
Here's the story of a festival that everyone had fun at and nothing bad happened. I hope you watch all three episodes.
I want to see
Matt
that.
Matt Kelly's there for it. Yeah.
Yeah,
you
totally
got it.
That for it.
All right. Well, that was Shaking Dark. Shocking Dark. Man, my handwriting.
Schlocking Dark.
Horrendous.
Good
yeah,
job,
Schlocking
Scott.
Dark. That Scott nailed it there. Another one of the listener submitted picks. Tom, you can stop emailing us about it. It's
He'll
done.
Find something else to email
it's
us
done.
About,
it's
and
been...
we love him for it.
Oh, it'll be something Italian. You know that much. But
Bellissimo.
don't worry about Burial Ground. I got it covered.
Yeah, but
we're good.
But we will be back with what I believe is a werewolf musical next week. I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard someone
oh,
say
no,
that there's musical Matt, numbers in
why
it.
Why did we agree to this shit?
I'm so excited.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.